Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello, you are listening to Africa Link, coming to you from our studios in Bonn, Germany. It's Wednesday, the 4th of July. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. We are live on Facebook, DW Africa. Feel free to drop us a line on the stories we are covering.
Coming up, divided opinions as South Sudan government announces plan to extend President Salva Kiir's term in office.
There will be slowdown in the peace process because the government will think that, okay, now our term has been extended. So why negotiate for a peace? Why can't we just struggle and find out a way of keeping up into this system?
The government should have a new mandate until the time the agreement will be signed.
Zimbabwe's military denies any plot to help President Mnangagwa stay in power as opposition threatens to pull out of the forthcoming elections.
We are ready to prove, as people who allege, where we have problems with certain people who are probably masquerading as the army. It could be that it's not the army, but they must be able to then smoke those people out so that they are not in the rural areas.
We will also hear how rescue workers are working tirelessly to save the 12 boys from Thailand who have been trapped in a flooded cave for days.
Yes, indeed, Zippy. Well, that and much more coming up shortly. But first, let's hear what has been happening around the world.
I'm Eunice Wanjiru with DW News. Angela Merkel has defended her new migration policy in Parliament a day after reaching a compromise with her hardline interior minister to limit illegal immigration. The German Chancellor said Europe's future depends on the way it deals with the issue. She also said the EU will make every effort to avoid a trade war with the US. Merkel said both sides were effectively locked in a trade conflict following US President Trump's decision to slap punitive tariffs on steel and aluminium imports.
This has the character of a trade conflict. I don't want to use any other word for now. It's worth every effort to try to defuse this conflict so it doesn't turn into a war. But it obviously takes two to do that.
Authorities in Thailand have vowed to take no risks in the complex efforts to rescue 12 boys and their football coach from a flooded cave. Divers found the group 9 days after they went missing, but rescue workers are divided about how to get them out as monsoon rains bear down on the region. Poland's disputed top judge, Malgorzata Gersdorf, showed up at work on Wednesday in defiance of a retirement law pushed through by the right-wing government but criticized by the EU as a threat to judicial independence. The Supreme Court Chief Justice branded the reform a purge and refused to comply with the new rules that require her to step down immediately. This news comes to you from DW, Germany International Broadcaster. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani has said the U.S. decision to abandon the nuclear deal was illegal. Speaking on a visit to Austria, Rouhani also said Iran would only continue to abide by the terms of the agreement if its benefits were guaranteed.
The nuclear agreement is an important agreement for Iran, for the European Union and for the world. What the Americans did was against international regulations. It was against the decisions of the United Nations. It was against multilateral commitments.
Moving on, Kenya's top prosecutor, Nurdin Mohamed Haji, has ordered 9 businessmen and government officials to be charged with manslaughter for their involvement in a dam bust on a rose farm that resulted in the deaths of nearly 50 people in May. Aid workers warned on Wednesday that tens of thousands of survivors of Kenya's worst floods are living on the brink with barely enough food to eat 2 months after the disaster. Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara dissolved his government on Wednesday, according to a statement from the presidency, amid tensions with his governing coalition partners. Ouattara reappointed Prime Minister Amadou Gon Coulibaly to form a new government, but the rest of the government, including the key posts of Finance and Defence Minister, remain vacant. Mali's Constitutional Court on Wednesday gave 24 candidates the green light to run in the country's upcoming presidential election set for July 29. And finally, Turkey's Recep Tayyip Erdogan won the presidential election with 52.59% of votes, according to final results announced by the Supreme Election Council. For more news and information, visit our webpage, dw.com. I'm Eunice Fungiro.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link program. My name is Jen Nyinge.
And I'm Zipora Nyambura. We also welcome all of you listening to us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Feel free to leave your comments on these stories we are covering.
Now, the United States has said it will not recognize South Sudan's government as legitimate if it extends its term for an additional 3 years rather than using the current peace efforts to legitimize itself. The government has proposed a bill to extend President Salva Kiir's term, a move that has been condemned by the opposition.
The U.S. ambassador to Juba, Thomas Hushek, said the efforts by President Salva Kiir and his team to extend its term through military, legislative or even premature elections will derail the current peace process. President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar met last week and agreed on a peace deal that included a ceasefire to end animosity between the two sides. Our DW correspondent Wake Simon Udu has been speaking to some locals who say it would also frustrate peace efforts currently underway in Khartoum.
The bill introduced to Parliament by the Minister of Justice, Paulino Wanawila, seeks to amend 5 articles of the Constitution, including 2 that will see President Salva Kiir stay in power until August 2021. Many people I spoke to here in Juba are afraid it will jeopardize peace talks with the signs of a new political deal in sight. Rich Malwal, a resident in Juba, thinks it could also lead to dissolution of the government.
Instead, they should have worked very hard to make sure that peace comes and they sign a peace deal. And of course, the peace deal will have another transitional government formed, and that is itself not a vacuum.
Like Malwal, Dimo Silva says the peace process will be adversely affected.
There will be slowed down in the peace process because the government will think that, okay, now our term has been extended. So why negotiate for a peace? Why can't we just struggle and find out a way of keeping up into this system? Because extending their term, they will have a ground to debate or to argue that, yes, we are legitimate because the people still want us.
The bill is now with a technical parliamentary committee who will review it before returning it to parliament for a second reading after 30 days. The lawmakers will then have to vote. Government and the opposition are currently in closed-door meeting, negotiating on security arrangements and governance for the last 10 days. Should they reach a breakthrough next week, they will then sign a permanent peace deal in Addis Ababa. Many parliamentarians, including the opposition, seem to have welcomed the bill. Gabriel Rorich Jur is the head of the opposition political parties in parliament.
We think that as other political parties, this is a legal procedure. And the government should have a new mandate until the time the agreement would be signed.
James Okuk, a professor of political science at the University of Juba, thinks the bill proposal is meant to pressure the rebels to compromise in the current peace talks.
If you think that if you drag on with this peace agreement, there will be a vacuum. No, we are not allowing a vacuum. We will just bridge that vacuum by extending our term of office, and we will be there for 3 years and you remain in the cold outside. So you better speed up the compromise and agree with us.
Wake Simon Udu there for us in Juba, South Sudan.
And of course, most of you have heard your say on this topic. Masaba Putin says, with the current state of affairs, there is no need to change the president now because South Sudan is still premature for Western democracy. He goes on to say they still need some authoritarian rule for 30 more years.
Interesting. We have this one from Lamina Jale says, both Salva Kiir and Riek Machar should be arrested.
Carl Rich Tabby says South Sudan should be the least countries to ever think of such dictatorship action. The country is there to see the light of the day, yet is just trying to fuel more violence by doing such actions.
Carl Vick, thank you so much for that comment, and keep your comments flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
For sure. And now we head to Thailand, and 12 young soccer players trapped in a partly flooded cave have started getting crash courses in swimming and diving in preparation for their safe evacuation. The course is being conducted by a team of about 30 Thai Navy divers.
Now, Gary Mitchell from the British Cave Rescue Council, who is among the divers that found the boys and their coach inside the cave, told DW in an exclusive interview that the rescue operation will be incredibly dangerous and diving should be the last rescue option.
It's a risky business. You've got to imagine the sort of the emotional state that these guys are in. The risks involved are considerable. It's a big ask of anyone, even with diving experience, to get in there. We know from our own rescue team that got in there and found them that it's a serious dive. It's a kilometre of flooded passages and round about an hour and a half's worth of diving. So that involves stopping, changing air tanks, all that sort of stuff along that route. If they could be looked after and kept well and kept warm and kept alive underground, that's almost the safest place for them to be in opposed to risking diving them out.
That is Gary Mitchell from British Cave Rescue Council, who is among the divers that found the 12 boys and their coach trapped in the cave for almost 2 weeks.
The authorities are still looking for other options of rescuing the boys, including letting them stay in the cave for almost 4 months until the rain subsides. Hopefully it does.
Absolutely. Now, moving on, Zimbabwe's main opposition Movement for Democratic Change, MDC, has threatened to pull out of this month's general elections if the electoral body does not act on irregularities meant to benefit President Emmerson Mnangagwa. This comes even as the country's army refuted claims by the opposition and rights groups that it planned to influence rural voters in the poll slated for the 30th of this month.
Now, the country's military has been under close scrutiny following its brief takeover in November that led to the resignation of former President Robert Mugabe. From Harare, our DW correspondent Privilege Mushaniri filed this report.
Zimbabwe security forces have over years been accused of being used to commit acts of violence against opposition supporters during elections. And opposition parties allege they are intimidating villagers to vote for the ruling party in upcoming elections. Army spokesperson Colonel Overson Mugwisi says the reports are false.
If some serving members are participating in the ongoing political campaigns, they will be doing so illegally and not as a result of an instruction from their commanders. Members of the public should be made aware that the Zimbabwe Defence Forces has no direct role in the upcoming harmonized election.
However, the opposition insists it has proof of perceived army officers who are in the rural areas carrying out the intimidation operations. The main opposition Movement for Democratic Change Alliance presidential candidate Nelson Chamisa says they will not take part in unfair polls.
We are ready to prove, as people who allege, where we have problems with certain people who are probably masquerading as the army. It could be that it's not the army. But they must be able to then smoke those people out so that they are not in the rural areas.
The opposition wants the Electoral Commission to ensure a transparent process of the ballot paper printing and provision of a credible voters' roll to ensure there will not be any rigging. Human Rights Watch Southern Africa Director Dewama Vinga says the Zimbabwe government has the mandate to enforce confidence in the electorate.
President Mnangagwa and his administration should level the electoral playing field by preventing the military from engaging in partisan politics or interfering in electoral processes and taking strong action to deter violence and intimidation by the military during the campaign period and also during elections.
That report was compiled by Privilege Mushaniri.
Yes, indeed. And ZP, we've got a lot of reactions on our Facebook page concerning that report. And Peter Mahamadu Joe says, let the army allow Zimbabweans to decide for themselves. They should stop extension of Mugabe's style of leadership. After all, anybody who will be elected as the president will be a Zimbabwean.
And Chibozi in Harare says, in as much as Zimbabwean election are concerned, people mourning over everything is what we are witnessing. If we take yesteryear pre-election moments and the situation now, you'd see that we are a people who are now confused.
And Marco Dark says, it won't be fair. It's the same guard with different color, and I don't see any changes soon.
Yeah, for sure, mixed reactions on that topic. Ngozi Chima in Delta says the army should stay back and allow the people to determine their leaders. Of course, you can also team in on these comments. For now, it's Africa Link.
You're listening to Africa Link, and we are broadcasting live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. My name is Jen Nyinge.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, young people in Ghanaian city of Sekondi Takoradi flock training centers to fit in the booming oil and gas sector.
I'm here to learn a trade, to work at the oil and gas industry. That's why I'm in this school.
I'm a welder, not just a welder. I'm having AWS. D1.1, that's the American Warden Society certificate.
Also on the program, fish meal sale rises in Senegal and Mauritania, at least to feed the reducing number of fish.
Yeah, of course, we have all that, Jane, and much more for our listeners. But first, we head to Nigeria because the country's efforts to fight insecurity in Maiduguri, Borno, have never been easy. Recent protests by mobile policemen over unpaid salaries and allowances have further raised fears. Security experts and analysts say delay in payment of the police allowances and salaries will further jeopardize the war against Boko Haram in the troubled northeastern region. Muhammad Al-Amin has more from Abuja.
At least 10,000 mobile police officers have been working in Borno since January. Their main task is fighting Boko Haram militants, a group that has terrorized locals since 2009, killing thousands and leaving more than 2 million displaced. However, reports that they have not received their monthly allowances and other benefits for 6 months has come as a setback. A grieved police officer who pleaded anonymity says they have been facing serious hardships, including sleeping on the corridor offices or returning from duty at night.
We have been posted here because of the insurgency for a special duty. Then we have been here this last year. They did not pay us our allowance. We want to know the reason why they did not pay us allowance. We could not have almost 9 months now. Even feeding, no feeding. We want Mr. President to intervene into this matter. Why our money is not being paid and they are paying to the soldiers? Soldiers are collecting their money every month.
Security experts and analysts have expressed shock over the issue, especially because many of them left their families and are risking their lives for peace and security of the nation. I talked to Abubakar Abdullahi, a security expert from northern Nigeria, who is warning that non-payment of police officers' salaries and allowances could have serious repercussions.
For somebody who will be working for almost 7 months without salaries, you could imagine, and he's having a weapon in his hand. One, if he's not contented, will go into armed robbery or in any crime, criminality. Federal government has to do something about this issue. Somebody who is particularly in the battlefield should be paid his allowances regularly, or else this thing will cause a serious setback in achieving the set objective of that mission.
In his reaction, Borno State Police Commissioner Damien Chukwu said they are making frantic efforts to pay officers, which will be now faster since President Buhari has already signed this year's budget. But locals in Maiduguri like Adamu Aliyu Ungulde said delaying police officers' salaries any further could endanger their lives.
It is obvious that Borno State is battling with Boko Haram insurgents. And these people were posted from other parts of the country. How do you expect them to fight the insurgents? The welfare of security operatives should not be taken for granted. The people of Borno are going to suffer because of this.
DW's Muhammad Al-Amin.
And Zippy, staying in Nigeria, France President Emmanuel Macron has told that country and Africa in general that his country cannot solve security challenges on the continent. Nevertheless, he said that France can provide a good economic base for African leaders to solve their problems. We asked what you make out of that statement on our Facebook page.
Yeah, for sure, Jane. Many people have a lot to say on this. Peter Damien says, how long shall we continue to look up to the Western world for solutions to our problems? He goes on to say, the fact, in as much as we are the problem, we have the problems to our problems, we are also the solutions to our problems.
And Joe Ndizela is of the same view. He says, when will France stop meddling in Africa?
And Jalal Amin says, that's an insult to all African leaders. A 40-year-old dude, he's referring to Macron, who became a president a year ago, cannot do anything for Africa.
And Balogun Oreufe says, Africa needs to look inwards to solve her problems and stop crying a teething baby, looking to Europeans to come to her rescue every now and again.
So people are quite skeptical. And what do you have to say? Go to our Facebook page, DW Africa, and leave your comment.
On the spot.
To Ghana now, where the oil and gas sector is booming in the Western region. But young people have found it difficult to find employment because they don't have the required skills. The sector has only been employing migrants.
To address the high unemployment in the region, the Western Regional Coastal Development Foundation has been organizing training courses so that local young people are prepared and acquire the required skills. Maxwell Souk is just back from Sekondi, Takoradi, which is an industrial city, and brings us this report.
Sekondi, Takoradi is Ghana's twin city. There is a blend of old and new buildings stretching along the seashore. Floating on the water is a fleet of ships owned by the oil company. There is money in this town, but so far not for many locals. To my right is a pavilion where unemployed youth hang out, gazing at the sea and pondering their joblessness. Edward Danda Swingham is one of the youth resting under the pavilion this afternoon. They feel they have been forgotten by this new industry.
It doesn't affect our life. When the money comes, it goes to the Accra.
Mark Bedu agrees.
We see nothing. When the ships come, they take their workers, and if you try and get closer to them, they will push you away.
Justice Taylor is 27. He admits he has no special skills to work in the oil and gas sector, but he is still hopeful he will eventually find work.
No, definitely.
No. I don't have any skills, but I would do anything I could get.
Many young people held hopes like Justice until they realized that they really needed technical and engineering skills that were far outside anything they had learned at school. But efforts are being made to change that now. Welding instructor Isikwenu is supervising her students at the Takoradi Technical Training Institute. She is contracted by the oil and gas industry to mentor youth who are interested in working in the sector.
I'm a welder, not just a welder. I'm having AWS D1.1. That's the American Welding Society certificate.
Joseph Opokuwari is one of the students AC teaches.
I'm here to learn a trade, to work at the oil and gas industry. That's why I'm in this school.
With this course, locals are hoping to beat the migrant workers who they feel have been stealing jobs, which should rightly stay within the region.
Whenever there's employment, they brought people from Accra and other countries, Tema and other, but the Western region people, no, we don't have any employment in that oil businesses.
The stakeholders who are providing the training know that they have a long way to go before they can skill everyone who needs a job. Ghana's technical and vocational training sector also needs more development and more investment. But in Takoradi, small steps are being taken to put that right and end the disappointed feeling of many of the unemployed youth around here.
Maxwell Sook with that report. Before we proceed, we just have to mention most of you listeners on our Facebook page. Malik Kamara is saying hello. Hello back to you. Shalindra Karki is giving us a thumbs up. Thank you. Jalo Alagye has sent us an emoji there. And Somnath Roy is saying hi. Thank you very much for joining us. You are also free to comment on these stories we're talking about.
Living Planet Africa.
For generations, fishing has been the key economic driver for most West African countries. But that source of income is drying up and really fast. Foreign fishing vessels, mainly from China, prowl the waters of West Africa every day. They capture millions of fish catches that used to go to the locals.
Then the fish are shipped to China, Europe, and the United States, satisfying a global demand for seafood and fueling a multi-billion dollar industry. And as DW's Marisina found out, the most affected countries are Senegal and Mauritania.
The hustle and bustle of Mbora Fish Market in Senegal. Hundreds of fish lie waiting to be sold. But Gaoussou Gay, a longtime fishmonger himself, knows that, unlike the lively market, the reality of Senegal's fish trade is pretty gloomy.
When the ships go out to the sea, there are not enough fish and they return without any catch. People are thinking there are no more fish left. If we still had enough fish in Senegal, we would not have to look for licenses in other countries to fish.
Today, Gay represents small-scale fisheries in West Africa as the president of the African Confederation of Artisanal Fishing Organizations. For many years now, he has been witnessing West Africa's fish stocks being depleted by industrial trawlers. Much more recently, Asian fishmeal factories have also opened up in Senegal. Fishmeal serves as feed for industrial fish farms in countries such as China. It is made from cheap sardines and herrings, precisely the same affordable fish that make up the staple diet of the local population. Francisco Mari, a fishing expert at the relief agency Bread for the World, is alarmed by the developments.
The problem on fishmeal is that for 1 kilogram fishmeal, you are using at least 5 to 10 kilograms of fish. So this is also something you are destroying the value of fish for the population.
The fishmeal factories are good customers for the local fishermen. They buy in bulk and pay in cash. Mari explains that as a consequence, Senegalese fishers have to compete with the large foreign companies for their staple food.
First thing is a higher price at the consumer level, but as it is done also by fishermen, small-scale fishermen without licenses, the threat is also deeper over-exploitation of the fish stocks.
In neighboring country Mauritania, foreign fishmeal factories have been around for about 10 years. More than 30 factories are currently active in the small coastal nation. Their toxic waste is dumped into the sea, while their thick smoke pollutes the air. Dr. Mokhtar Ame is a doctor in the port city Nouadhibou, which is home to more than 20 mainly Chinese-owned fishmeal plants. For many years, he has been witnessing the deterioration of public health in the region. Dr. Ame has seen more and more Mauritanians abandoning their homes in the city to protect their health from the fishmeal fumes.
There are many diseases that are directly related to the pollution of these factories. They release toxic air particles into the environment. And when these particles enter the body, they cause allergies, chronic bronchitis, and skin rashes. We cough a lot and have infected throats because of these particles.
European parliamentarian Linnea Engström is the vice chair of the Committee on Fisheries. She sees a possible solution which would combine foreign investment and support for the local population.
Real investment in a real factory that will provide, you know, real fish conserves. That would be real jobs for the local population. It would be real food, not food for animals. And I think that's the kind of investment that we need.
But to achieve long-term change, the cycle of taking fish out of the ecosystem to breed more fish needs to be broken. Several American startups are currently developing a technology that uses naturally occurring microbes as a substitute for fish meal. Hopefully, the innovation will not be too little, too late.
Marie Sina with that in-depth report.
And Zipi, just going back to our top story, South Sudan government has proposed a bill to extend President Salva Kiir's term, a move that has been condemned by both U.S. and the opposition.
Yeah, and Marco Dax says, at this crucial time, South Sudan does not need those kind of tactics from either the government or the opposition. And he goes on to say, it will only be legitimate through a negotiated peace. Anything short of that, I don't think will be recognized.
Thanks so much, Marco. We have this one from Nicolo Diwomio. He says, extending term limits for a few months or years is exactly how President Paul Biya started out. And then people ended up with no presidential term limits at all.
So thank you very much for your comments. We are very happy for your company. I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
And my name is Jane Nyinge. Thank you so much for your time.